Welcome back. Welcome back to the pod. My name
is Peter Kim.
And that is your host.
Kim.
That's right. And we are the host of Two Kims, One Pod.
One Pod.
You guys, I can't wait to, first of all, I can't wait to be back in the same room with you, Angie, because it's been too long.
And it has been too long.
We took a break on our live touring, but guess what, folks? We're coming back live, baby! So if you are in the PNW, Pacific Northwest area, and we're specifically talking about Portland, Oregon.
Portland. And Seattle, Washington.
That's right. You have spoken, and we have answered your call. We are coming to you, baby. March 23rd and 24th.
May.
Too late for that. May 23rd and 24th, respectively, Portland, Seattle. Mark your calendars. Tickets are up for the Hereafter, which is the venue in Seattle. So go find tickets. Get them right now. They're going to be sold out. So please go, 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 buy them.
We celebrate AAPI month accordingly.
That's right.
By supporting two of the loudest Asian people you know.
Yes. So
two of the most toxic Asian people you know.
Right. Toxic, loud, and oftentimes annoying. So see that in person. And we'd love to meet you. If you haven't been out to a Two Kim show, we do stand-up, we do games, we do segments that we do on the pod. We have special guests. So it's going to be so fun. And, you know, it's community building, baby. So come on out. Seattle Hereafter, May 24th. Tickets are up. Tickets are not up for Helium Portland yet, but they will be up. So I believe in the next few days. So please get your calendars, mark them down. And also, if you'd like to see me at the Irvine Improv, if you guys are in the OC, SoCal area, I will be headlining my first improv gig. It is stand-up. It's not an improv. It's just called, the clubs are called improv. And it's, I'm a little scared. I'm nervous because it's a big room. It's 490 seats. I've done the room before opening for Fortune Feimster. And, you know, it was fun to do a feature room, a feature set in that room. But as a headliner, you really have to fill that up. So please, 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 if you're in the area and if you'd like to join us, please come to the Irvine Improv, the late show, 9:45 p.m. I know it's late, but it's Friday. Get drunk and get rowdy. I don't even care if you're
drunk
at the show. Yeah, and then drive down to OC. No, the Irvine Improv is in this huge mall in Irvine. And it's one of those like outdoor, like SoCal type malls that's like real bougie and nice and have a lot of like food places. So go eat, go drink, go hang out, have a night, and come out May 3rd, Friday. I'll be headlining. So that's all the business.
So exciting, Peter. So exciting.
Angie, I'm freaking out. I'm like freaking out because first of all,
you've been doing an hour.
No, not about the hour. The hour's fine. Like that's more stamina. Like I'll have the stamina to get there and not like run out of breath or like whatever, start like flop sweating on stage. But
I mean, that's going to be immediate. So.
Yeah. As soon as the stage light hits me, I'm going to be
going to start sweating. Yeah.
I'm not nervous about that. I'm nervous about filling the seats. The room is so big.
It is big. 490 is
it's kind of like ridiculous for a club, right? It's almost like a small theater size. Like clubs usually like maxed out 300 something, 320, you know, like this is like 50% more. So
I think the Cobbs in San Francisco is pretty big too. I think that
big.
Is around
that's big.
That's 400, though, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And that's still that was like I don't think I can do that. But you know, I'm hoping that there's some regular traffic, weekend traffic that comes, like people who have been there before. And I don't know. I'm just like praying for a stroke of luck to so that it's not like I'm truly calling in all the favors to my friends. Like, you know, how I've never done a Kickstarter. I've never begged for money. Like now I'm begging. I'm begging my friends like, please come down.
Please.
It's not even money. Like I'll comp them tickets. Just fill the seats. Just come there and laugh out loud, please.
Please. I mean, this is also, it's AAPI month. Like, come on. People got to, you got to show up. You got to show up and show out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of like, kind of the move though, right? Like in May. I mean.
What? Going to see Asians?
Yeah. I mean, white people, what are you doing during May? Try to.
Yeah. What else is going on in May? Memorial Day?
Weddings? Yeah. I'm trying to think. Whatever. Just go see Peter.
Go see me.
Peter May 3rd.
Yes. May 3rd, Friday at the Improv. And then come see us in the Pacific Northwest.
Later that month.
All AAP.
Get a flight.
Yeah. So May is very busy.
Get a
get a
for
flight.
You white people to see us at multiple shows.
Yeah. So anyway, the business out of the way. I'm excited for it. I'm a little scared. I'm looking at features to see like who would be good to feature for me so that they have a different kind of style, but also different material. Also possibly could draw somewhat of a crowd, a local.
Yes.
You know, something like that. So I'm looking around. But anyway, I'm excited. It's one of those like anxious things where you're like excited, but also scared, you know, like not just like terrified, you know, like the SATs. But
oh, man, I'm getting that anxiety. I like just like thinking about it again. God,
the SATs.
Yeah.
No, like just you'll like never have to take them again. Isn't that such a nice feeling? It's such a nice feeling knowing that you'll never have to take an exam again, like in that way, like Scantron exam.
I mean, this is the thing, though, like just thinking about it right now, it is psycho what we do to teens.
Oh, my God.
Like
the pressure.
The SAT, the pressure is crazy. Psychotic. When I'm thinking about it right now, like, and also, you know, as a child that there's this like big test looming. Like, I remember learning about the SATs before I learned about civil rights. I knew
100%.
About the SATs before I knew
the PSATs.
The PSAT.
Before I knew women could vote. Like, truly, that they didn't have the right to vote. Because SATs, like, you found out in, I don't know how you found out about it, but I believe I found out on TV. Like, Saved by the Bell, maybe.
What? That's how you... My mom told me about the SATs when I was in kindergarten. I had prep books. I've had prep books in my library since I was in first grade.
LOL. That's like, hilarious.
Truly.
What did you do on the SATs? Did you take SATs or ACTs?
I did both.
You did both?
I did both.
Okay, so I didn't take the ACTs, so I don't know about that. But the SATs...
all the stuff in the Midwest took ACTs.
ACTs, right? But you took both? Yeah. What? Yeah. How did you do on the SATs after all that stuff?
I did fine.
Okay.
I did fine.
Okay, good.
I did good. I did much better on the ACT.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, on the SATs, I did fine. I had like something in the 1400s or something. Yeah, I did
That's
fine.
Good. 14?
But I've been preparing it for it since I was 6.
Since you're 5, you should have aced it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I guess for like Koreans our age, like 80s, like 80s born kids, we really felt that pressure because we were first gen, if not immigrants. So our parents had no idea what we were stepping into. They were like, take this book and fucking remember these vocab words and make sure your analogies are right. You know, like.
I mean, just like prepping in a way that felt like, that's what I mean. Like the pressure that you're putting on such a young child and for such a long time.
Yeah.
It'd be one thing. It was like intense and you're like, you start to prepare for it, understand what it is when you're like 15, 14, like you enter high school and you're like, oh, there's this big test. Mm-hmm. But to prepare since you were a child, to know that it's looming, that everything is going on a permanent record, and like thinking about it for so long, it's like it is such a specific type of torture. Because also when you're talking about the partnership, like the 80s Korean kids of it all, the kids that came over, even first generation kids that had parents that are from the 90s, their parents are different.
Yeah,
they are also from a different Korea.
Exactly.
Like our parents were hungry.
Yeah, desperate.
Like they remember hunger. So
we were their lifeline. We were the insurance policy that they threw everything into.
This is the 401k.
Yeah, honey, and you know, guess what? It's been emptied.
It's been the stock market was bad. It crashed. None of these bonds, none of these assets have any value. You were unwise to put it in this.
They didn't even get $1,400 back.
I mean, truly, like, brutal. But, I mean, because I was just thinking about very specifically the difference in the type of immigrants, like generationally, like if you were '90s or like, I mean, basically even Gen Z immigrant kids, their parents are so
like they come different. Fully speaking English. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Oh, like they're, if, it's a different thing.
Even if, sure. But even if they don't, like, even if they are like coming from places where their parents don't know any English, they're coming into a culture in America that is very different.
Yes.
Like we grew up softened in a time the blow. When there weren't, we grew up in a time where there weren't even sushi restaurants.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, like it was a new thing when sushi made an appearance in the culture.
I know. Yeah. And everyone was like, ooh, I'm never going to get full.
Yeah. But you know, they're like, ew, what's this? Like crazy thing. And it was like only a thing that very bougie rich people did. It was in the mainstream at all.
That's right.
Or it was like very like Asian thing to do. I mean, people are talking about kimchi in a way that's like, you know what I mean? Like,
I know.
I have white friends that make kimchi more often than I do.
It's troubling. It really is. And you know it tastes like shit. You know it tastes like shit.
I don't know.
They don't got the right gochugaru. You know how like you have to get the right gochugaru? You can't that just like use like chili flakes. You know what I mean?
No.
Like you can't. You have to get like the real gochugaru that's been like hardened with the sea salt. And then like, you know, like you can't just use regular gochugaru. And you have to use, if you're using like chut or like fish sauce.
Yeah, yeah.
Each fish sauce or like haejeot or something makes it taste so different. So like
radically.
That's what, exactly. And that's what white people, your white friends probably don't know. They're just following a recipe and they're going, this is kimchi. But like, no, that's not kimchi. That's fermented cabbage, honey. Okay. But you're right. I was watching Top Chef yesterday and they had kimchi as one of like the secret ingredients they had to use.
Oh, okay. That's easy. That's not even
so easy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I was just thinking like, wow, they're really, our food culture at least has really come around hard. A lot like the Japanese American culture where like it started with sushi and then people started getting into like manga, anime, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, of course, video games has been huge and that's been coming out of Japan since day one. But now like Korea has kind of taken over the major East Asian like cultural export, and we no longer, I mean, we still like indulge in Japanese media and stuff like that, but like way less than we used to before Korean media became like the Hallyu became like huge.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of like off, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like a little off put sometimes when our culture is completely saturated into something like a Top Chef or like a Bravo or something. And I'm just like, what? And people are talking about like K-dramas and stuff like that. I'm just like,
yeah,
I don't know how to feel. Like, I feel like seen, but also like it's, I don't know. It's unsettling to me.
I mean, you're being seen, but also you as a person are now becoming blending into this other, the culture that's in the mainstream.
Right. It's like this pastiche that white people are like, oh, it's like a new flavor of the week we're experimenting with. It's like, kind of like how people loved Thai food for 10, 15 years.
Yeah. I mean, it has, you know, what's interesting is that like Japanese culture remains the culture of choice for
the rich,
the elite.
Yes.
Yeah, like of people with taste. Like it implies having some sort of like a discerning, elevated sensibility.
Yes,
you know, the implication being that.
Yeah.
And still Korean is still like the thing that everybody just likes. It's like sort of bad, but everybody like indulges in it. It's K-dramas, it's K-pop, it's stuff that like is implied is like trashier.
It's almost because like going back to analogies, SATs. Finish this analogy. UK to US is like Japan to Korea.
Yeah, I mean,
like the UK is like the version of America that's like, I guess, highfalutin. It's still like, if you still watch TV and someone has a British accent, you're like, oh, they're smart.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes, in culture, being perceived, absolutely. Yes. But in actuality,
it's not.
It's not.
But, you know, UK, probably similar with Japan. You know, like, there's trash Japanese people. But, you know, it's an island country, and it's been around, like, the hegemony of the Japanese Empire has been so culturally and historically relevant. Mm-hmm. Their armadas, you know, their naval operations, all that, their occupation of Korea, conquering Manchuria, like all of that. I think because America and the West writes the history books that we read, we see a lot of Japan included and almost no other East Asian country until now, you know, like until the cultural exports of Korea have been like completely adopted into like international export, where like not just East Asia, but Southeast Asia, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, like people are watching K-dramas. Like it's mind-boggling that the things
I mean, we K-drama is all over Thailand, the Philippines. Like it is
crazy.
It is the culture.
Yeah.
It's the culture.
And the fact that they
almost
have migrants
more so than American culture.
Absolutely. And the fact that they have migrants moving to Korea to do migrant work after watching K-dramas, like that's like if we watch like Downton Abbey and we were all like immigrating to UK to like work on, like on the bottom area, you know, or whatever, like it's
to be servants in a manner
like because they're all doing like migrant work, not all of them, but like there's a huge like influx of Southeast Asians but specifically being inundated with Korean culture and also choosing to move to Korea to live as a like second class citizen. Like that to me is so, I can't imagine that as like an American version. Like what would that mean for us?
That things here are really bad.
Yeah, I guess if things get really bad here.
I mean, because it's because we don't know what it's like to be an immigrant. Like if you truly get down to it, the every immigrant at its core is not only a survivor, but a dreamer. Mm-hmm. Right? Like the impulse to survive and thrive is very deep and strong. Mm-hmm. And again, not saying that anyone that stays doesn't have that. But the other
No,
but the other part, right? The part that compels you to leave is the dreamer part.
Yes. And probably you're forced to dream because you have maybe no other option besides like selling your kids off to like work stuff, you know?
I mean, because the reality is that I mean, most places, you can say what you want to say about America because it is very limited in terms of class mobility here, but it is more than most anywhere else in the world.
100%.
Most anywhere else in the world. Yeah. Like most anywhere else in the world, they hear your name, see your face, and then you're done.
Yeah. Like they India, there are like entire family names that are like, oh, you can't work here.
Done.
Crazy.
And it's the same thing in Korea, same thing in like France. Like class mobility is very, very much not a thing most anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty bad here.
Oh,
but the dream is that it is, and it is slightly better. Slightly better.
For sure. I mean, yeah, we can't say that we're not better than people everywhere else in the world right now.
I mean, you and I both are. I mean, the idea is that basically in America, the class mobility that occurs is almost entirely from immigrants. So that's the reason why you and I are able to, like, and that's it. And that's it. It's not like our parents are better off. They didn't experience any mobility.
No. I don't think they, maybe they dreamt of it, but they really were dreaming for us. Like, most of my mom's or your mom's generation, I think, not has given up, but like they knew that coming here means that it was a step towards our, like their children's future, not really theirs. Like they came here to be working class.
For sure.
I think my mom definitely had dreams of like moving up.
Yes, mine too.
But squandered it all, like literally every chance they got. And now that I'm where I am, they're like, well, I guess we squandered his chances too.
I mean, it's crazy to consider. I mean, I was thinking about how often my parents came home with like a different scheme. You know, oh. you know you're working class or poor when your family, like every couple months, like had a new thing that was going to change your life.
Exactly.
Right. It was an Amway. Mm-hmm. It was like some other sort of like
Mary Kay, a new product from Korea that they could possibly hawk faster than an H Mart.
Yeah. Like, it was all like when I think about all the boxes.
Oh my God.
Of products.
Just shoved into the corner, stacked. It's like that thing where, remember in Beef when he like shows him all the like popsuit, all the rice cookers stacked on the wall. I was like, oh my God, that was my house.
Yes.
At one point, my uncle, my Samchun, who had ruined his used car dealership business, real estate business. Mm-hmm. And by the way, this is all through personal bridges burned. And then also ruined his nail salon that he opened for his wife.
Wow. So many people gave him chances, though.
He gambled and borrowed from banks and then fucked it all up.
I mean, it's crazy because like it's so much capital for a used car dealership.
Mm-hmm.
For what was the other one?
Real estate.
Real estate. That's not really capital, but you have to have a license.
He's an agent. Yeah.
Yeah, but the nail salon, that's capital.
Huge capital. And it did, but the thing is sometimes, like, these things did well for a while, so it built capital for the next thing, and then he would, like, waste all the money.
Squander.
So that's, like, the name of the game for our
family. I love the squander, too. Yeah. Squander's kind of like a vibe with me as well.
So he came over one day, my Samchun. And this is when he was divorced from his wife and whatever, lost the nail salon. And
she got the nail salon and the divorce?
Yes. And then it got ruined another way. But it doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. So,
fire?
Like,
okay.
She was selling stolen bags out of the back, and the FBI caught her and they had to shut her down. Yeah. It was like a 6-month sting. Anyway.
Okay. Can I just say something to the FBI?
Move on.
You don't have anything better to do?
Go arrest Diddy.
Thank you.
What the fuck is Homeland Security doing? And what is HSI? Have we ever heard of HSI before, this sting, this Diddy thing? Like, why are we coming up with new police? This is crazy. It's so psycho.
I mean, truly, like, it's a sting, a raid on a lady.
Immigrant woman's.
Making a few extra $100 a month.
No, she was making a lot. It was a lot. Because she was.
That's why.
She was selling Gucci off the truck. So she wasn't selling them for like $25-$30 because these weren't fake. These were actual bags. So she was selling them for like thousands of dollars.
Yeah. And that's why they had to raid.
And then she flipped on her provider, which is why
they raided her. On her plug.
On her plug, who was doing like millions of business out of China. Anyway.
Crazy.
I know. Like, it's all like import-export stuff, and people like take stuff off the like crates. And
of course. Yeah.
We lost it or whatever. Anyway, so he came one day. It's so bad. So my uncle comes over one day. He goes, this is when I was in college. He comes up to me and he goes, hey, do you and your friends, you guys have sex? And I was like, what? I like literally have never talked to him about girls, sex, boys, nothing. He was like,
yeah, that's not uncle conversation.
No. And if it is, get out of the room.
Get out of the room.
And
FBI?
HSI? NCIS? Long Island? Get his ass.
New police is crazy. Yeah. Can we get a cure for something new?
For real.
Instead of making new police? Can we get new cures?
Can we tackle seasonal allergies?
Thank you.
The fuck?
What's happening?
Homeland Security investigators? Get the fuck out of here. All right?
Get the fuck out of here.
Shut it down.
Can we do something about the pollen? Can we do something about this pollen?
Yeah, some dander? Get rid of it. Anyway.
I'm talking about Homeland Security pollen.
Yeah, secure our homeland.
Thank you.
Anyway, so he comes up to me. He's like, you and your friends have sex? And I was like, what? And he's like,
what a crazy intro sentence.
I know. And he goes, I'll tell you what, Samchun can't get hard if he's laying down. Do you experience that? And I'm like, what? And he goes, if you do. And then he pulls out a pill bottle. And he goes, he's like, I could get you Chinese Cialis for very cheap. I was like, Samchun, me and my friends are 20 years old. We don't need Cialis from China. Okay? We walk down the street and a like errant breeze is getting us erect. Like, we're walking hormones. And what the fuck are you talking about? Like, he was like, I could be your plug.
To really try to like to approach your 20-year-old nephew.
Yes. Cause I have like friends at college who are like, I guess like fucking.
Because all of the ajumas, ajushis he knows are like, nah, we don't need this.
They all died of heart attacks after taking Chinese Cialis. Anyway, so.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's been.
That is so funny. I mean, it was a thing during that time. Because I'll remember finding horny goat weed in my parents. It must have been like a
oh
thing.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Of course. Of course, they're dealing with erectile function dysfunction, and they're
but like the fact that it was like still like because there was now a pill that you could take to address this issue,
right?
Because this was like during the height of that Viagra kind of wave, because it was new and it was like it was heralded as like the cure,
for male impotence.
Finally,
yeah.
Little do we know.
Finally, you don't have to sit there and rub ginseng root in your taint anymore. Like, how did they do it before? How did Asians get hard before?
I mean, but also...
Before the drugs, what did they do? You know they were using East Asian ass, like, needles in the
butt. But also, was it ever a problem? Like, all
of
these
cases... Erectile dysfunction?
No, but I mean, like... The Asian people have always been fucking the most. Like... A billion people in China. People had to stop fucking. They were like, please stop.
Yeah.
There's too much fucking happening. In Korea, it's almost like since all the Cialis and stuff has come, Viagra has come onto the market. I mean, Korea actually has a lower birth rate now.
Well, okay. Speaking of which, not to just switch subjects real quick, but have you heard of this new feminist movement in Korea called 4B?
Yes. Or something like that? They're opting out. They're opting out.
The opt out.
They're closing the window. They're closing the tab. They say no thank you. Yeah.
They're not. This is what I've been dreaming of, and this is what I have been proselytizing: is to stop copulating with men. Stop
until
giving
they do
them
better.
Until they show up and show out. And the women
it's
in
true.
Korea have, at least the movement in Korea, has really locked down the pussies. There is no vaginal, and not even just like intercourse, but there's no like sexual congress happening because of this movement. So if you guys don't know, there's this 4B movement in Korea. I think that's what it's called. It's, I forgot what it stands for.
It's, wait, let me look this up. It's,
But there's a movement in Korea. It's a new feminist movement. And not new. It's been like 10, 15 years old. But it's really caught on now. Especially because of all the essay that's been happening with like hidden cameras and all that nonsense that like Korean women have to go through. And so they were like, you know what? You're not going to change your ways. We'll change our ways. How about that? And we'll stop fucking you. We'll stop hanging out with you. We'll stop dating you. Nothing is happening from now on until you start acting like a fucking gentleman, like a human being, and treating me like a human being. So
it's actually called the 4B. It's actually like the 4 no's. So like in Korean, the 4 B's is like bihan, bichusan, no marriage, no childbirth, no romance, or no sexual relationships.
Boom.
So
that's what I'm talking about. We need to get that started here. How do we do that? Like, that's the Korean cultural export we need. You know?
I mean, like, truly, like, there's something Greek about it, right? That there's that Greek play where the women refuse to have sex with men until they stop the war.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's oh God.
Teresistes or something like that.
Yeah, I remember that.
So we should look it up. But like there is something very Greek about it. Like it is a corrective punitive measure.
Yes.
That is supposed to elicit specific behavior.
Yes.
Right? As a parent, this is the best way. You show, you don't tell. Right? You demonstrate. There are real consequences to your actions. Mm-hmm. And not until you fix the behavior.
Yes.
Do you get what you want?
Yes.
So, I mean, there's something about it that really does feel very Greek, but also, of course, it's Korean women that do this. Like, of course. You know what I mean? Because there is something about the fuck it of it all that is very modern Koreanness.
Exactly.
Like, just
I wonder if that will. Because I was also watching this TikTok about how, like, this guy, you know, Asian boss, he was going mm-hmm. around asking Korean women in Korea, like in the streets, have you had any type of surgery? And if so, what was it? And if you haven't had surgery, how do you feel about your face? Like, rate it. And, like, what kind of surgeries would make it better? Or do you think? And then literally everyone he's interviewing has either had some kind of surgery, is waiting for the next surgery.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and there was this one girl. It was so sad. She was so cute. She had no surgeries. And she was like, I'm a natural face, so I guess I'm a 2. And if I get surgery on my eyes and nose, then I could at least pull it up to a 5.
Yeah.
And I was like, you're getting your face cut up so that you can be a 5? That's crazy to me. That's so fucking nuts. You know
how crazy Korea is, right? Like, you have your job applications. You
have a photo.
Apply. You have a photo. I mean, my cousin had to get surgery before she applied. It was like a thing. It's like a built-in cost.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm wondering is that, like, if can this 4B movement be congruous to how we look at ourselves in, you know, like, I know, like, not everything is for the male gaze, but that's really what's driving a lot of, like, Korean beauty standards. It's... You know, like, sure, there's other women that you want to look pretty for, but, like, is that really it? Like, are women getting surgery, like breast implants, to be have bigger boobs for other women?
Right, because it's mostly men that are making the hiring decisions, and
you're
so much of the worth of a woman.
Your boss, your sajang, everything is based on the Korean man.
I mean, men are getting a lot of plastic surgery too. It's
so much.
The
roids are
scrutiny.
Crazy.
This is what I'm saying.
These bubble packs on these Korean men are out of control. It looks like balloon tits.
It's crazy. I think it's more, that to me is a symptom of the patriarchy, yes. But it's a function of the patriarchy insofar as, like, that patriarchy is a function of capitalism. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it is real. Everyone is really being oppressed by capitalism there. Like, in a way that their spirit is being ground into a powder.
And, you know, capitalism is a function of patriarchy. Like, it can't exist without the other, I don't think.
For sure. So it's like, it's to me, that's more the looks of it all. I think everyone there needs to, I think, you know, I've been saying this for a couple of years, but I think all of us need to find some version of God again. We can't do this anymore. We can't find meeting. We got to stop. All of us need to, you need to join a cult. You need to go back to church. You need to find somebody outside of yourself and how you think you are being perceived and how you want to be worth more, whether or not it's in actual assets or having people validate you.
Yeah.
We really are looking for it in the wrong places. Like, you know.
And also there's something, like, really boss about being, like, rich and ugly. You know what I mean? Like, that's powerful.
Power,
yes, exactly. It's like,
power move.
Oh, you're not, you don't like the way my face looks? My visage is unpleasant to you? Okay, eat my entire asshole because I own this country. Like, what the fuck? You know,
eat
like,
eat my asshole because I will pay you to do it. And
honey,
you need this money.
And yes, and you'll say, thank you, can I have some more? Okay? You'll ask for seconds and dessert because Listen, changing your face or body is like, it's such a like, it's, it feels poor. You know what I mean? It's giving poverty. Like, to have to like change the most shallow thing about you to fit in feels like it's screaming you have no power. So there's something really like unctuous about being fugs and being like, okay.
Wait, how are you using this word unctuous? Because like, unctuous yummy. Means oily, right?
Yeah, yeah, like meaty and you know, like umami about
Cause,
like.
Because typically unctuous is used to describe like slimy slipperiness.
Oh, really? I unctuous is like oily. Good food.
Okay, so yummy. That for you is like unctuous.
Yeah, something like mouthfeel, like a umami mouthfeel that's like, oily, but it fills the mouth with like taste. And there's something like really like round and yummy about being a fugly bastard and being like, and what? And what?
To describe getting fixing your face as poverty, like... It's true, because there's a poverty
that's
of the spirit.
That's what I mean. That's yeah.
The poverty of the spirit, of the mind, right?
And the soul.
I agree.
Do what you need to do to be happy.
Absolutely.
But let me, and you're, like you're saying, can we find a higher meaning? Just a little higher than your eyes being double-lidded? You know what I mean? Like, just, and here's what. If you, I know plenty of people who got surgery, and more power to you to be happy. Like, I'm not here to yuck your yum.
Sure.
But as a society, is there a way we can be a little less thirsty?
Okay, so I 100%. I do think I love an ugly rich person. That is truly to me such power.
Oh my God. And like, because, look at the, I hate the royal family, but look at the royal family. Not one presentable visage amongst all of them.
Diana was the only one, and they had to import her.
Exactly. So was Kate Middleton, also imported.
Mm-hmm. Imported.
Yeah.
That's why they
none of the bloodline is. That's like that to me. I know like their power's fading, but like that to me is like, look at Vladimir Putin, one of the fugliest bastards alive. Short.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. And yeah, short kings, blah, blah, blah. But he's short and ugly. And has a like a dumpy dad bod. And he's the most powerful person.
He's strong, though. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
He's strong. I think Putin is strong. Yeah. Putin, you're strong.
Putin is strong and mighty.
Don't listen to... Yeah.
A perfect physique for a leader. Yeah, I don't know. Like, Benjamin Netanyahu, ugly.
Oh, Bibi is.
Like... Yeah. Trump, ugly, you know, like, sure, he's a fucking asshole or whatever, but like, it's all men, I guess. There's not a lot of like, I get because Queen Elizabeth, ugly. That,
but I'm I, like, for women in particular, most, a lot of power is garnered through appearance.
Their beauty.
Like, yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, even female CEOs, you'll see, typically have, are attractive in some way, right? Aside from like Angela Merkel, maybe is the only one. Golda Meir, maybe.
Both of them, trolls.
Trolls, yes. But
Bunions.
But Bunions on the foot of their country.
Angela with that haircut, I was like, yes, go off, fugs. That
but truly, typically, the first female leader of any country is pretty attractive.
Sure.
Typically.
Sure.
Typically.
Yeah. Especially especially if the like voting block it was restricted to men.
You know? I mean, you know, that's my call, that I think the first female president of America will be a Republican. No, Republican and hot.
Of course. Yeah. There's no way.
Required. Required.
Yeah. Unless something
it's just hard.
Happens. Yeah, it is hard. So, you know, I want to challenge the power-hungry ladies out there to keep your original face and to rise above the shallow shackles of beauty that's quickly fading every day that you spent alive and breathing on this earth.
to get so much power that people are forced to cotton with, like, your ugly face.
Your jacked up teeth.
Like, truly, like, to get that much power that people, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also, I will say, I think this is actually going to happen.
Look at Jeff Bezos. One of the ugliest.
But to me, like, the fact that he's doing this and trying to fix himself is actually, like, kind of gauche and weird. Because
I think that
the teeth, the veneer, all of it. It's like, I think that the move in the next generation will be, if you keep your teeth, if you have a natural face, this will be a representation
heralded.
As wealth, success.
Oh my
because
God.
Because all the pores, because as plastic surgery becomes more accessible.
Yes.
Everyone's face in Korea is
the
people
same.
Do medical tourism. Yes.
Yeah.
People do medical
it's
tourism.
It's like here
to
in West Hollywood.
Korea.
It's the same face everywhere.
They go. It's this is what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't even know what a Korean face should look like anymore.
No.
Because no one fucking looks like it.
No.
So
if you want to see a Korean face, go to Flushing, Queens. Okay.
If you want to see a Korean face,
go to Lawrence Avenue.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
no one will be surprised. Not a single procedure done.
Absolutely. This is what I'm saying. There are more Korean people that look Korean in America now because everyone in Korea, they have the same fucking face. And it's like, well, what is.
What's special?
What's special? What's authentic here?
Right.
You know,
I think you're right. The Uggos are going to be authentic. And people are going to
like
be like,
not having
sensitive
surgery. Like,
yes.
It's beautiful. It's, I really do think it'll go back to that because.
I think it does. I think it will.
Yeah.
Because everything's cyclic and it will go back to that. And we'll stop being obsessed with like creamy white skin and then we'll go, we'll start going into like, oh, look at the tan on her. And like, it'll go back to that. Once this American white. It's not. Yeah, it is. It's about white superiority, and Korea
yeah,
and
Koreans
East
do
Asia
really have. Yes, it's really built in. It's such a
it's really
colonized.
Built in
it's a colonized mind.
It really is.
It's a colonized culture. Yeah.
Yeah, and we've seen it in India via UK. We've seen it, you know, everywhere that's been colonized, and Korea specifically. Moves so quick and evolves so quick that they've really taken that white is right like concept and they really ran with it to the nth degree and there's nowhere else to go but folding back in. So I do believe you and I, if we keep our faces, one day we could go to Korea and be heralded as natural beauties.
But, I mean, unless I get this lip filler, like I bust my lip, guys, and this is why. But
you're gonna have to need to fix that because that, that doesn't look good. You keep like looking at yourself, like, "Wow, she's Angelina Jolie," but it looks like you have a. It looks like a giant bug took a shit on your mouth.
I'm like, oh,
yeah, no, you keep filler. Looking.
I'm like pouting more. I'm like, oh, okay.
I'm a little baby. I can't do anything.
Like, I truly, I mean, yes, if we keep our own faces, I wonder as we age how this will change because this is the lie of capitalism. Profits cannot go up forever. And this is the attitude and mentality with this in Korea, right? If everybody looks the same, everyone gets the same surgery, everyone has this, like, where are we going here? What is the goal? Profits cannot go up forever. So when the stock goes down, what does that look like? Because there's so much industry
Girl.
Now built around beauty, built around all of the plastic surgery there.
What?
So, you know,
if Korea doesn't want to cave in on itself, they're really going to need to do like amp up the tourism so that internationally people could come and do the beauty tourism and whatever the fuck and feed Korea while Korea goes back to like a normally existing country. But,
I mean, I would love that to like export this toxicity.
Yes. And then like be cleansed of it. That would be amazing. Anyway, so all those fuggos out there, stay powerful, stay strong. Unji and I are with you. We are on. We're on the
unless I do this lip filler,
and unless I get Botox right over here to get the. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. That's all for today, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye. Bye.